Hello and welcome back to Dream Girl. I'm Sheen, your host, and today we're joined by a guest that I've been trying to get on the show for the past 3 years. So I'm super excited to welcome Dr. Saliha Afridi, who is a clinical psychologist, a mother of four, and also an entrepreneur. She runs the Lighthouse Arabia, and she's also a mental health champion. Hello, Saliha. How are you?
Thank you, Sheen. Thank you for having me.
I'm super excited for today. So how have you been? End of year? What are the vibes?
It's been okay. It's intense right now. It's lots and lots of mixed feelings, a lot of pain, a lot of sadness, mm-hmm. a lot of gratitude, a lot of love. So lots of heart-opening experiences and feelings.
Yeah, I feel like 2024 has been intense for everybody. Yeah. But what advice do you have for us in terms of what is the best way to wrap up the year? In terms of, you know, our mental health, how to compartmentalize and how to process everything that has happened and be ready for 2025.
Well, we're getting right into it. I think it really depends on what you are holding right now. I think the word you used is a good one. Compartmentalizing, titrating, don't try to do everything all at once. This is a time when a lot of people are around family, for better or for worse. It can bring up a lot of different feelings. You can be quite triggered, even though you love them so much. And so that requires a lot of energy. And so what I would say is you can put things away and tend to other things that are in front of you right now so you can show up in your best way. I would also say be very preemptive when it comes to grounding, and also when you're done with whatever encounter you have, whether it's with your family or friends or a loud party or a big gathering, I would say resource up before that. So do some grounding and centering before that, and then also do it after that. And know that you are holding grief. And if it becomes too much, give yourself permission to put it away and or talk to a professional or join a support group where you know you're honoring it, you're showing up for it, but it is not coming there in front of you all the time. We're always holding it in our heart. And I think this is where what a lot of people have been struggling with right now, that there is so much pain inside of me and there is so much sadness. How do I show up for the joy? And I think you must hold both of these together. You must hold the joy and the gratitude alongside of the grief, which makes the grief more bearable. So make sure that you make space for all of these different experiences and emotions that show up during this time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And honestly, I love your voice, by the way. I just wanted to tell you, you have such a soothing voice.
Oh,
and when you're talking
you.
About all of these things, I just get carried away listening to you. And
thank
I was like, I need
you.
To remember, I need to ask questions.
Yeah.
So, Saliha, I'm going to take you a few steps back now. So tell us, what got you onto this journey of, you know, becoming a psychologist and everything? What brought you here?
You know, it's actually a really windy road. I am just genuinely a very curious person. And when I first took a psychology course, which was in my undergraduate program at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, I hated it. I hated it. I was like, there's no way I'm taking another psychology course ever again. And when I was younger, I wanted to do what my father did. I wanted to go into international business. It was sexy. I was going to travel. It was going to be one of those jobs that I was going to do. So I was just sort of geared into, okay, this is a person I look up to, and this is what he does. And, you know, my dean in high school told me that you could sell ice to an Eskimo. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I would be good in sales or I would be good in business. And so then but I didn't pursue it in my undergraduate. I just was completely turned off by it. And I pursued my degree in cultural anthropology and communication, which was journalism, mm-hmm. like a mass communications with an emphasis on journalism. And I didn't literally had no idea, but those were the classes that were interesting. And so I declared my major and that was that. And then I did my first job in a marketing firm. And just as it happens with me, very suddenly, one day, the sky opened up and a lightning bolt literally felt like it hit me on the head, where I was like, hold on a minute. Am I going to be doing this for the rest of my life? Like, that sounds like a really long time to be doing this. And what meaning will I get if I am a marketer, which is to sell things to people that they don't need? And that was what I was doing. And my definition of marketing was quite narrow at that time. Remember, I'm just 20-something at that early 20s. So I said, nope, I'm not going to do this anymore. And I walked out of there and I walked into my boss's office and I said, I quit. And he was like, what? And, you know, he was looking for me to be this kind of rising star within the company. I said, nope, I'm going to go be a dentist because I like to make people smile. I swear this is a true story. And so I joined in like a pre-dental kind of take the courses and the chemistry and the organic chemistry. And I remember sitting in that class and saying, there's no way I'm doing this for like the next 4 years of my life. Letters should make words, which make sense to me rather than these things that I was seeing. So I was like, nope, I'm not going to do that. So I drop out of that program. And I really went to my older sister and I said, I don't know what to do with my life. And she said, what do you love? I said, I love people. I love caring for people. I got nominated most caring person in my high school class, senior high school class. I like people. I like stories, which is why I went into cultural anthropology also, like reading about cultures, reading about people, reading their stories. And she said, okay, well, why don't you be a psychologist? And I was like, that sounds like a good idea. It's good that I have a very short-term like memory when it comes to like, oh, I hated psychology, so I didn't do that. But then I was like, actually, that's a good idea. And so I took my courses. I entered a master's program. Then I went on to do my doctorate. And I've always given myself permission that if I get bored, and everyone knows it too, by the way, everyone in my family like holds on wondering, okay, when is she going to quit and go do something else? But if I get bored, I'll quit and I'll go do something else. And so I never took my path very seriously. And now I'm 20 years in, since the first ever master's class that I took. And I still love it. I'm still studying. So I am still in, you know, I'm going to UC Berkeley once a month. I'm in Switzerland 3 times a year. So deep in studying at this time. But when I decide that I don't want to do this anymore, I'll probably not, but it hasn't happened yet.
Okay, I love this. We have so much in common because I also have had the weirdest squiggly career. And this is the term that they give us now, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they call it the squiggly career because I actually have a PhD as well in spinal research.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I also started off as an engineer, then went to do a PhD in spinal research, then went into becoming a consultant, and then left that, went into tech startup, and then left that. And now I teach, I'm a professor, but I also do the podcast.
Wow.
So same, we've switched a lot. And you know, one question I get all the time, and I would love for you to answer as well, is I feel like for us, we are always optimizing for happiness, right? Mm-hmm. What makes us happy? So if something is not serving that, we have the courage in, as you said, not taking it too seriously and move on to the next. Mm. But a lot of people don't feel that way. And that's why a lot of people are stuck in jobs that they hate or relationships that they hate or a course that they hate. So what advice do you have on how to make that decision bravely to pivot?
I think a lot of people are in situations maybe because they don't have another option also. So I think it is a privilege. Mm. It is a privilege to be able to pivot. Not everybody has that. They have kids to feed or people to look after, or they have to pay the bills. And I see that as a privilege. And I think that if people are in a position where maybe they can't leave a relationship because they're financially dependent on the person, I'm not speaking to those people. Mm-hmm. I'm right in this answer. I think those people have a different set of things that they have to tend to, and they have a different reality to the one that I had. I had very supportive and very stressed out parents, very supportive, and they didn't understand me, but they were able to financially support that decision. I also am able-bodied. Mm-hmm. I was able, you know, physically, I was able to do what I wanted to do. Mentally, I was able to do what I wanted to do. So I thank God for that privilege. Having said that, there are some people who I think take themselves too seriously and say, well, I've invested 5 years into this and oh my gosh, it's going to take me 9 years to get another degree or 4 years to get another degree. And I don't. And so I think if you look at the whole chunk of what is needed for you to pivot, you're never going to change. But if you just see that it's day by day, bit by bit, you just have to start. And when you start, the whole universe will conspire and support you in that direction. So for me, I don't know what word you use. I think you said emotional, or what did you call it? we are too emotional, or we look for happiness.
Yeah, optimize for happiness.
I don't know if I'm optimizing for happiness. I actually feel like I don't have a choice. It really feels like I'm possessed in some way or completely disengaged. So I'm really attuned to my spirit, and I have a very loud spirit. And I know it sounds a bit esoteric, but I am a very spirited person where the spirit is louder than my mind. And when it says you're done, like you can try to convince it, you can try to manipulate it. It's just not going to engage. And it withdraws all approval. And then I'll go into a depression. And then it's like, now go work with this. And so it's like, okay, I can't move. I have no other choice but then to quit. I have no other choice than to leave. And so for me and my spirit, we have a very complicated relationship because it makes me crazy sometimes in the things it asks me to do. But I've now realized that I submit to the spirit and I don't argue with it very much. When it says go, I say, okay, fine. Mm-hmm. You'll find a way for me to figure it out. And I have a lot of faith in my spirit. It'll find a way.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the spirit? Is that what we also call a gut feeling?
I think so.
Okay.
It shows up like a gut feeling. It may show up as intuition. You have a sense, but my sense is just very big. It's not just a gut feeling. It becomes like an overall head to toe feeling.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very big, like it takes full command and it's become bigger and bigger the more I acknowledged its presence. Mm-hmm. Because I have a great ability to recognize patterns, and I noticed what was happening. And every few years it causes chaos. Every few years it challenges me to go to the next level or go learn something new or go, you know, try something different. So every few years it makes me pivot in a way where, so I noticed that I have a pattern also, like 4 to 5 years, there's going to be some chaos that's going to happen. But yeah, I do think that if people start to meditate and still themselves and really connect to that inner voice, we all have an inner guide. A diamond, as it has been called, a genius, as it has been called. We all have like an inner genius, an inner guide. I just commune with that inner guide quite a lot. We do this life together.
I like that. I like that. And as you said, like, if there's too much pull and push, that's when you're not happy either. So it's better to just let them guide and see what happens.
And I trust it now. Sometimes I was like, you know, but I trust that. It's very value centered. Mm-hmm. It's not going to make me go and, like, you know, abandon my life and my kids and my family and go.
Yeah.
It doesn't do things like this, but it does say, take this course. And it's like, how am I going to do that? I have 4 kids. My parents live with me. My in-laws live with me. Like, how am I going to take this course? How am I going to do this once a month? I have to fly to California. And it's just like, just do it. And then I'll be like, well, I'll think about it. And then I'll dream about it. And then I'll be thinking about
it. Everywhere.
And then I open a magazine and it's there. And then I check my email and they've sent me, you know, so all of a sudden I'm like, okay, fine. And then, you know, I'm already 5 months in and and another 4 months and I'll be done, you know? So like it's, sometimes we make a bigger deal about pursuing our goals. Day by day, it doesn't take that long.
Yeah, I think if you set your mind to something, you can find a way to do it.
Or your heart.
Or your heart.
Or your spirit. The spirit will handle it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I love that. But now that you mentioned, you know, how, of course, you have your work, your career, you have a family of four, you have your parents and your in-laws that live with you, plus you're studying. The one question I have is, I think a lot of young professionals are also struggling with that balance of how do we make everything, how do we kind of like show up for each aspect of your life? And what advice do you have for them?
I would say absolutely in a obsessive way, schedule everything. And I know some people are like, well, what about spontaneity? Schedule it. Schedule the spontaneity. And there are open gaps in my schedule where I'm like, I'm not really sure what's going to show up. And I think the more children you have or the higher up you go when it comes to responsibility in like a company, you need to leave more white spaces because crises will show up and you will be asked. And then you'll be really pressured. So leave gaps in your schedule where there's white spaces, but schedule everything. If I have a call and I'm in the back of a car, I'm going to, you know, make sure that that's scheduled. If I have to wash my hair, that's going to be scheduled. If I have to hang out with my children, that's going to be scheduled. If I'm doing lunch with my family, that's going to be scheduled. Like every move I make is scheduled. And you'd be surprised how much time you actually have if you are intentional with that time. And there are times where it's like the whole day is without plan. And I just want to do whatever shows up that day. And usually that's going to be on the weekend. And I try to be very protective of that time. And so if someone says, can you come do a podcast on Sunday? It's like, nope, that's really protected time. So what's going to show up for my kids? What's going to show up for my husband, family? That's Saturday and Sunday. But the rest of the time, it's pretty tightly scheduled. And that allows me to balance everything because all that is important to me is in that schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Ask me what I'm doing on January 25th. I'll tell you precisely what happened.
Yeah.
At 10 a.m., what's going to happen that day? Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm always flexible and, oh, we can't do it this day. We have to do it this day. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have everything else kind of scheduled, then it's easy to be flexible on some things.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, not everything goes according to schedule. That's okay. Make space for that flexibility. And then I would say, manage the time you spend on social media. That's a big like energy drainer, but not just energy drainer. It consumes a lot of time. I'm on social media. I really appreciate social media. It has changed the world. It has changed, opened our eyes, broken our hearts, expanded our minds. It has done that. So I really am quite grateful for social media. And we have to use it in a way where we are not neglecting our priorities. And for me, showing up in front of my children, my husband, my studying, my reading, those things are really important to me. So once all of that is in, I'm going to have a little bit of room where I engage with social media, but I do that also very intentionally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, a lot of things I want to pull the threads here, but I guess the first thing I want to ask, though, a lot of times the conversation we have around feminism or the modern feminism understanding of it, whether we agree with it or not, is that do you think we're selling women a lie when we tell them they can have it all? Or do you think it's very manageable and it's possible to balance it all? I mean, you clearly are, but do you think it comes at a price?
Oh, that's a tricky question. There's no clear answer to that. I think women first need to figure out what they want. This is what I want.
Yes.
This is not what my sister wants. This is not what my elder sister wants. This is what I want. And it does come at a price. And, you know, it does extend me beyond my day to day. Like there was no balance. I had zero social life at the, you know, when I was starting up the lighthouse and I was new to this country and I had three children under 4 years old And I was a single mother at that time. And so, no, there was no balance in my life. I was obsessed with two things, my children and my work. Mm. So, and in there somewhere, I would find some time to sleep, you know? So for me, it did, you know, and eventually that caught up with me and I realized what burnout means and I know what being completely exhausted means. And I learned along the way. So I think the most important thing is that you have to figure out what your all is. Your all can be so different. And when you say you can have it all, what do you mean? Because if you ask my friend or if you ask my sister, they have it all. Mm-hmm. And that's their definition of success. So really be very clear as to what your definition is. And I know that's evolved for me. And I know my energy as I'm now approaching almost 50 years old, like my energy is different now and my priorities are different now. I have elderly parents. I have children that need me a lot more right now. So I'm pulling back on work. I'm still working. I'm still learning, but I'm now more present in this space. So it's constantly moving around and saying, what do I need to give my attention to? And how do I redefine that? And I think that renegotiation, redefinition is really important. You cannot just say, well, this is what I'm going to do and then do that for the next decade. Mm-hmm. It didn't work for me that way. I'm constantly updating mm-hmm. what that means. What my all is changes.
Yeah. And yeah, I think flexibility, as you said, is super key because we evolve as well as people, right? We're constantly learning. As earlier you were saying, we're a different person than we were 3 years ago, yeah. right? So Then our priorities change, what we care about change. So It's really important to keep evolving. But now going back to what you said about social media, I really liked the way you approached this topic of social media. And I was reading this paper recently that said that we will only find out the actual impact of social media in a few years. We still haven't reached, like, it hasn't existed long enough for us to know the long-term impact of social media. But even now, so for example, I teach students and I see how social media has impacted them at that age, early 20s, compared to what my early 20s was like. You are constantly bombarded with everyone's highlight reels of their life, right? And you see the good and the great and the perfect, but you don't really see the ugly. And that leads to a lot of, you know, the comparison game sucks out the joy from mm-hmm. everything. And that's also true for adulthood as well. So when you're a young professional, you start seeing others buying a car, buying a house, and you don't know the rest of their life, but suddenly you think you're running behind based on that. So how do you see social media impacting the mental health arena? Let's say, especially for like young people.
So my kids didn't have social media. Like my daughter just got it and she probably doesn't know what to do with it, you know, because she didn't have it in her teenage years. My son has it only for football, but he's in a, you know, in a boarding school where he doesn't have access to his phone till like 8 p.m. And then he has to sleep at 9:30. So he doesn't have a lot of time with it. But my younger two children don't have it. And I feel quite strongly about that. I mean, I will send them to the moon and I'm very okay with that, but I will not let you get on social media. And this is how strongly I literally had this conversation with my son, who was like, oh, you know, you're easy. I get what I want from you. And I said, yeah, I do say yes a lot. I say yes to anything, really. Like they wanted to go to, my daughter is in California, my other son is in France. Like, yes, sure, I'll say it. But I will not let you get on social media because I just know how that warps your reality. And at that young age, when they don't have a fully functioning frontal lobe, they don't have their executive functioning fully formed yet. They don't have impulse control fully formed yet. You give them this highly addictive, highly destabilizing, highly consuming app, which creates a reality for them, which is not the reality in which they will live. And that can have a very detrimental effects on a young personality and a young brain. And the young personality, which then becomes self-obsessed and becomes, well, let me show you everything there is to know about me, and then becomes really quite consumed with, will I get liked? Will I get shared? Will people follow me? This is already a very fragile time in a adolescent, in a child's life. And now you throw in the super peer. It's already a time of peer pressure. You throw that into the mix. And when I say young, I'm not talking 13-year-old. Our frontal lobe doesn't fully form and personalities are still in shape even till 23, 24, mm-hmm. right? So our identity formation task is still very much on and in our undergrad years and when we enter the workforce. So I really think I don't need the research. I don't need the research to tell you that this ain't going to end well. This is going to go real bad, guys. I don't need the research to convince me that people are lonelier than they've ever been. And people don't have the social skills to connect with each other. They get really, and they said that, you know, even typical children are showing atypical kind of spectrum type of social skills because they don't know how to manage their anxiety. They don't know how to have a difficult conversation face to face. They don't know how to show up and ask for what they want because everything has happened behind the screen. And a lot of that has happened on social media. So, I mean, there could be another 4 hours and I could still be talking about the effects. But I think parents need to do some gatekeeping here. Mm. And I know a lot of parents are like, well, everyone has it. Well, if that's the value that you're going to raise your children on, everyone has it, so you should do it too. Then they're going to grow up and everyone has a Mercedes and you should get one too, even though you can't afford one. So anchor yourself on the values and don't be afraid to say no. It's a privilege. It's not a right. It's a privilege to have social media. It's a privilege to have a phone. It's not your God-given right. Your rights are education and having a roof over your head. I will give you these rights, but I don't have to give you a phone or social media. So yeah, really people need to take back their power and really have a very... Social media is not going anywhere and it's just going to get more and more intense. We need to manage our relationship with it.
That's so interesting. It's impressive that you've managed to get your kids off social media until you wanted them to get on, because I think what a lot of young parents probably struggle with is, but I don't know what they're doing when they're at school. They might be looking at someone else's social media.
Right? Just like you did things when you went to your friend's sleepover, but they weren't allowed in your house.
Exactly.
And as long as you create that little bit of noise inside of them, that I'm doing something wrong. But if you give them permission, then you've given them permission.
Yeah.
So am I under any illusion that my kids don't have access to social media somewhere? No.
No.
I'm under no illusion.
Mm.
But do they know they're doing something wrong when they do it? Yes. Mm. And so I need to create a little bit of interference there.
Mm-hmm.
And for them to know that this is not okay for them.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they grow older, they will know this is not okay for me because my conditioning has been, and this is classical conditioning, by the way, from psychology 101, I have conditioned that this is not okay. Now, I grew up in a house where we had one TV,
mm-hmm.
like many of us did.
Yes.
And we grew up watching no TV.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have TV in my house. I have one TV and we watch Apple TV, but I don't have television.
Mm-hmm.
And I never did in the US. I never did during my college years. We just didn't grow up with TV, so I don't need TV.
Yeah.
And I'd much rather be sitting. So it's, what did you grow up with? Like, I didn't grow up eating eggplant. So I can't eat eggplant now. It's, what did you get a flavor for in mm-hmm. your childhood? That's the task. So I will not give you a flavor for this. And eventually, maybe one day you will get on social media. And my daughter said, what do you think? I need a handle because this is how we communicate on the campus, college campus.
Mm-hmm.
They don't say, what's your phone number? They say, what's your handle? I was like, oh, okay. So they have handles and they communicate on social media. So she started a social media account. She had two posts on there, but this is how... But she's not in the habit of it
mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is my task as a mother. I need to make sure you've got all the right habits So there's always something competing, and I'm not going to give you full, like, free rein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that, because you don't miss what you've never had.
Yeah.
So then, as you said, not having a TV, you're not going to miss having it. Yeah. So then it's easier to do. But also touching on what you said in terms of validation, right? When you were saying they want the likes, they want the comments, and then they start putting out more and more just to go to see what other people are getting likes on. And then you start, everybody start comparing and becoming the same person. And that's also true as you grow up. It keeps happening and I keep seeing it around me. And I realized that, as you said, I love that you said that, that we're really losing the ability to make real connections, because now there's so much, oh, but I watched your story. I know what's happening in your life. I don't really need to pick up the phone and call you and say, how are you doing? And I actually had a friend who I said, oh, I haven't heard from you in a long time. And she said, yeah, but I know what's happening in your life. And I was like, but we haven't connected. And I realized that now this is building this false impression that we know a lot of people, we have friends, but loneliness is there.
Yeah.
But how do you see this getting worse, or do you see us getting better at this? What do you think?
I think it was quite a few years ago where the Surgeon General in the US called loneliness an epidemic. Like, every Surgeon General chooses a project, and his was loneliness. And yes, I do see it getting worse. I do see, I see it right now. Like, where's our humanity? We are losing our humanness. So we think of ourselves as robots who don't need to sleep. We stay up till 2-3 in the morning. We eat things that are not real and of the earth. We don't feel when we see another person in pain. We operate like machines, and we have all of these algorithms through which we judge the world, or we say, well, you are worthy of my feelings and you are not, and you are not good vibes, so I'm not gonna, you know, like these algorithms we've created, which are not human. This is not a human thing. When you are human, you will naturally connect. You will naturally seek out people. You will naturally be interested and curious. It is our natural state. So when we are not in that state, then I would wonder, what is going on? And what have you forgotten about yourself?
Gosh. Okay. So clearly, when it comes to like parenting, it's a lot easier, like what you were saying, you know, the way you raise your kids, we can protect them from all of this from a young age. But what do we do about people like me who are already grown up? How do we then empower them?
It's the same way. We all have to parent ourselves. Mm. We have this absolutely consuming technology that is making us forget who we are and making us forget to look around the room. Go walk anywhere. Go to a bus station or go to a taxi stand. Who looks at each other? Go to a doctor's office. When was the last time you, like, you know, smiled? Or when you were in the waiting room? No one looks at each other anymore. You know, so I think these are the things you just have to set an intention that I'm going to be more human. And that means I'm going to rest. I'm going to go out in sunlight. I'm going to eat. I'm going to call my people. I'm going to have once a week, if not more, like dinners with my people where we leave the tech outside, which is what we do when we have our lunches as a family. That there's a table, a tech table.
You have the jail for the phones.
Yeah, that goes there. And then we have in the middle, just
go check,
make sure everybody's okay. And then we move to dessert. So like there is a moment where everyone can get a fix, but like you can go 2-3 hours without looking at your phone. And I think that's what you just have to make an intention and say, what is important to me and how do I want to live my life? Really define that and then make the small moves. For example, something as small as I told myself, I will not type while I walk. Now I can do like 15 things at the same time. I have quite a great capacity to do quite a lot, but I will not type and walk. And if I am walking through a mall, let's say, I will pull over to the side, send the message, and then I will start walking again. Why did I say that? Because when I walk, I want to look around. I want to look at who's there And by the way, I'm like the only one looking up. By the, everyone else is looking down. You don't find that in Europe so much, by
no,
the way.
No, no.
Like when I go to Switzerland, like everyone's looking
people
at each other.
People are smiling as well, yeah.
And they're like sitting in the park and throwing frisbees. And I'm like, why? This is so amazing. Like this. And so I do see that in other parts of the world. I don't see that here in Dubai as much. And in certain parts of the US, I don't see it as much. But you don't need to be so productive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really productivity. That's just busyness. Like, it's okay. You don't need to check your phone right now. And whoever needs you, they'll call you if it's really urgent. Like, this kind of urgency culture is also there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get a message, I have to respond right away. I don't. I'll respond to you when I'm done talking to Shane.
Mm.
And then I will speak to you. But right now, I'm fully here with yeah. you. I want to be here with you fully. Heart to heart, eye to eye. Ear to ear, we're here together. And in one moment, 1 hour, we can reach a great depth that most people wouldn't be able to if they were distracted and mm-hmm. fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
And that connection is going to feed me for the next week, maybe the next 2 weeks, because you've had those deep connections. So it doesn't require you to be like that all day long. It requires a moment where you say, all right, I got 2 hours with my husband, or I got 1 hour with my kid, because these kids are also quite busy. I got 1 hour with my kid. I'm on and we're going to connect. I'm a therapist. Mm-hmm. I see people once a week for an hour, 90 minutes. And I know the greatest, you know, have gone to the greatest depths of their psyche with them. I know the most about them in their whole life. From all the people that they know, I know the most. Why? How? 1 hour. It's because I'm there, fully present, non-judgmental, open, touched by what they say, really interested in what they say. That's how magic happens. It doesn't take a long time. So making that intention is very important. Short answer.
No, you are absolutely right. And you know, you just brought me back because I went to a stand-up comedy show in Abu Dhabi and they locked all of our phones.
Mm-hmm.
And the initial reaction when I found out was panic, being like, oh my God, I won't see my phone for 2 hours. What if someone messages me? What if someone is calling me? And I went with a friend of mine who is a very busy person and she panicked, right? She was like, what if I get an email? What am I going to do? And I was like, but it's Saturday night. Like,
right.
You should not be getting a work email. But then when we sat down for those 2 hours, it was the best time we've had in a very long time.
Yeah.
It's so intentional. You are present for the show. You're enjoying it. There's no need to take pictures to show people later that you were at the show. And it's just, and you're not checking the notifications. And I was like, I don't know. I think this is the first time ever
that
I haven't had
your
phone. Right.
You need to lock it up yourself.
So now I do. And before going to sleep, I leave it in the living room.
Yeah. Airplane mode.
It's there.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's on silence. I don't hear it. I'm in my room. I read and then I sleep. And my quality of sleep has changed. But yeah, so that's the thing, the whole connection thing. You're so
right.
You
have to define that. And it's focused. All the energy is you experiencing rather than, oh, how should I, you know, what will I write in the comment? Let me record this. You're not fragmented.
Mm-mm.
You're fully present. There are so many experiences I've had where I was like, oh man, I didn't even take a picture.
Yeah.
But it was like, but I remember that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times people, what did you do last week? Most people can't tell me because they actually don't remember because they were actually not fully present.
Mm-hmm.
So we think we have dementia or we're losing our memory. You're not losing your memory, honey. You don't have attention. If you don't have attention, it doesn't transfer over to long-term memory. It has to first be processed by your short-term memory, but our phone has become our short-term memory. So we are not transferring. We're not making any memories. You will remember that comedy show on a Saturday night for years to come,
mm-hmm.
but you won't remember what you did the other Saturday night. Because you were fragmented. So it really is about being like, listen, nothing's going to happen. So this is what I mean. We got onto this conversation by you have to parent yourself.
Yes.
You have to lock up your phone rather than having someone lock it up for you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say, I'm putting it on airplane mode. Everything else can wait. Or I'll put it on ringer and I'm going to let my kids know that they can call me if they need me. But that parenting has to happen and that intention has to happen. And I like to use this phrase of memorize the moment. memorize the moment. Like, imagine that there's no other memory that you can have. You cannot take a picture. You have to remember this moment when you are 70 years old. How would you engage? You would engage with an intensity because you've got to remember the details of this. And then when you remember that, that's going to be the memory you have, not the ones you have in your phone.
And you know, now there's also the other epidemic of people also have TV on and they're scrolling.
Multi-screen, yeah.
It's everything. They're just overloading their senses. And I saw recently that Netflix, you know, the way they are accepting pitches for new movies to get on there is it needs to be a movie that can be a background play. Wow. So now they're even taking that into account. It needs to be something that people will put on to play while they are on their phone. So it needs to have that effect. So that just literally is showing you how society is evolving in a way to allow people to keep scrolling.
Well, multi-screen use has been shown to reduce the gray matter in our brains. So Netflix doesn't care about your brain. And neither does Instagram, and neither does Facebook, and neither does Twitter. They don't care about you. They don't care about your relationships. They don't care about your love. They don't care about your work. They don't care. The only thing they care about is, will you get addicted to our app?
Mm-hmm.
And will you stay on our app for as long as possible? It's designed to keep you on. They call it engagement.
Mm.
I call it addiction. And so how do I get Sheen to become addicted? How do I make sure that this thing is playing all the time somewhere in her psyche or on her screen? That's what they are designed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we are falling right into it like the Pied Piper with the little,
We're all in the river.
Yeah, we're all in the river. And no one's thinking, hold on a minute.
Mm.
They don't have my interest in mind.
No.
And this is the stuff that I tell my kids. I don't have to control my kids. Mm-hmm. I really educate them. Like, listen, I just know. And these are the books that I've read. And this is the research that's coming out. And these are the documentaries we saw together. This is designed to get you addicted and to make sure that you are most insecure and most obsessed. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very tough question to not say, okay, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
But okay, so but that's the part where, you know, we use social media for kind of like entertainment or, you know, comparison, and which is there. But you also mentioned a lot of people use their phone all the time under the pretense of being busy, you know, and that's one thing I see a lot of, especially with my friends who are at work. We can be having a really deep, serious conversation and there's a ping of an email and they just, you see the anxiety in their eyes as soon as that work email comes through, and then they're gone. You can be talking to them, but they're not there. They're just not there anymore. And I think that, again, that brings us to the hustle culture, right? So now there's this whole thing of, like, as you said, it's busyness rather than being productive. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, I need to be active. I need to respond to an email within 20 minutes when it comes. And otherwise, what will they think? What advice do you have for, you know, young professionals who are, especially those that are now starting to experience, you know, the professional world, and we're there trying to learn how to be someone who is professional and do the things that you want to do well? How do you balance the fact that they have access to you all the times? And especially in Dubai, you get WhatsApp all the time from work. How do you create those boundaries to protect yourself?
It depends on I think it's important to have conversations in your work and in your personal life about your WhatsApp etiquette.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had to have a conversation that this is going to be like an email box. This is not a chat. Mm-hmm. We're not chatting here.
Right.
This is, you've now converted WhatsApp into a quicker email response. And I'm okay with that. So there's like level one email, and then there's like the basic email, right? Like, so this is urgent email, and that's like all the other emails. Mm-hmm. And if we've used it like that, just know that I will get back to it within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I think for young people, they really have to learn how to communicate and understand the expectations. No one's going to really expect you to respond at 8 p.m. on a Saturday night. They won't. I don't think so.
You think?
I think, of course, if you're on a project and there's a deadline, I get it. But no, on even the employers are starting to see that being on leads to absenteeism, presenteeism. And so we don't want you to be on all the time. We actually want you to go off. So when you're on, you're actually on. Mm. So I think if you show that you bring value on the weekdays from 9 to 6 or whatever it is that you're working, that, okay, I log off at 7 p.m. and I don't check my messages until 6 a.m. the next day. Mm-hmm. I think if you tell them, I've actually never in all my years that I've lived here and all the years that I know of working with executives and working with young professionals as well as older professionals, I've never had someone where they were like, no, that's not. But if you say, listen, I check my WhatsApp from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. That's it. Those are my WhatsApp. If it's urgent, call me. I've never had someone be like, what are you thinking? That's so unprofessional. Mm. Now, there are times where there's a, you know, I've worked with consultants where it's like, it's cram time. We don't have the weekend off. We are on hands, all hands on deck for the whole weekend. Okay, very different scenario, but you don't live like that.
Yeah.
So I would say get very clear about your expectations, communicate your expectations with everyone that you engage with. And I would say add value when you are on. Mm-hmm. Make yourself so valuable that they understand why is it that you're not checking your phone all the time. Mm-hmm. I am not checking my phone all the time, but I'm not also just sitting on Instagram, right? I'm not checking my phone because when you meet with me, you know that I'm fully focused, fully engaged. I'm going to take notes. I'm ready. So they, that's who she is. She's really, when she's in front of someone, she's really on. So create a reputation for yourself that you're fully engaged, full, like very professional. You're not checking your phone on messages, you know, when you're in a meeting. And that's what they will start to expect for themselves as well. Mm-hmm. That, if she's not responding, then she's probably with someone right mm-hmm. now instead of being disruptive.
Yeah.
So, and I think if it's really an important thing, then get a separate phone and make sure that that person, those notifications are on. I tell everyone, turn off your notifications. You're literally like a Pavlovian dog. Ding! And you salivate. Like, it literally is like that. It's proper, like I said, classical conditioning where something notifies you and you pick it up. Why? I'll pick it up when I want to pick it up, not when you tell me to pick it up. So you have to have a little bit of like a resistance, you know, and rebellion inside of you to be able to say, you don't get to tell me what to do. I'm talking about my technology. You don't get to tell me when to answer. I will tell you when I'm going to answer.
Oh.
And I think that was an important turning point in my engagement with technology too.
That was actually going to be my next question to you, because you know how people say that now we experience high cortisol levels just when an email comes in. And it's the fact that you have access to those emails, right? And like these emails have access to you. And as you said, every ding or something leads to either anxiety for people who they don't want to see that. Or as you said, people just jump on it and being like, I want to reply. It's like the dopamine hit as well. It's just a lot of mixed signals. And this is something I struggle with. I hate seeing unread notifications on my phone. So I need to like reply just to get rid of it. But then how do we move forward from that? Would you say for me, for example, I should just switch off the notification sound so I don't hear it?
Yes.
That's how you regulate it.
Yeah. And turn off your notification on WhatsApp. You know, the double ticks?
Yeah.
So they won't know when you've read it. You won't know when they've read it.
Mm.
I remember when I first did that, it was a very weird 10 days for me because my phone was dinging and blinging all the time, right? And it was so disorienting for me that there was nothing. So I would pick it up and I would pick it up. And then slowly it quietened. So there is a withdrawal period and there is an adjustment period, but turn off the notifications. 100% turn off the notifications. If you are in a workplace, just say I will, in my out of office, for example, in my email, I check my email twice a day,
mm-hmm.
or And you can even put it in your set. I check my WhatsApp, you know, every hour and a half. Mm-hmm. I will respond to you in a timely. Like, you can write stuff like that.
Yeah.
You just draw the boundary. And people, I've never had anyone be like, what were you thinking? And I'm a psychologist and I deal with a lot of crisis, you know?
I know.
If it's a crisis, call me.
Yeah, people will call if it's urgent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to make everything urgent. This moment, this life is urgent. My life is urgent. My moment is urgent. This is my engagement with this moment is most important right now. Mm. And when I go to WhatsApp, I can crank out, you know, 50 messages.
Mm. Yeah.
In a very short amount of time. Because, okay, now it's WhatsApp time. Okay, back to the meeting. So I'll leave gaps in the middle of my meetings because it's a 10-minute gap where I will check all my WhatsApp, respond to that. And then for another 3 hours, I will not respond to it, right? So it's like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take your power back.
Okay, 2025, here I come.
Here we go.
WhatsApp notifications off.
Not all of a sudden, everybody does not like me because Sheen is not responding.
But it is too much. And I always struggle with it. I'm like, how do people not reply immediately? Because I want to become that. So now I know.
Now you know.
Now I know. I just need
and
to
like
cut
I
it
said,
off.
It, there's an adjustment period.
Mm.
But it will be the best thing you do for yourself.
Okay. Okay. I'm excited. But also my question for you, this is personal curiosity. As someone who's a therapist where you talk to a lot of people, you hear about the good, the bad, the ugly, how do you leave it there and don't carry that emotional strain with you into your personal life?
You know, my mom didn't want me to be a psychologist because she thought it would deeply affect me emotionally because I'm like a really emotional person. It does affect me deeply. And I don't think there's a clear, you know, boundary between what affects me and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
There are days where I've worked with a client and they've shared something with me that has deeply, deeply, deeply affected me. And I do carry it with me. I honor it. And it's, you know, and that was one of those days at work. And I'm holding that and I'm honoring that. So when people say, no, I leave that at work, and I don't know how people do that.
Mm.
What affects me at home, I will bring it into work. What affects me at work, I'm a human. And what I do is a very human thing. I show up with my heart at home and I show up with my heart at work. And my heart holds a lot. And I show up with all of that. Now, over the years, my capacity has increased and I can hold a lot more than I did when I was younger. So everything affects me. That's my answer. Everything affects me, but it doesn't weigh me down.
Okay.
Most of the time. Because I don't see the human experience as something that weighs me mm-hmm. down.
Yeah.
Even if you bring me the most traumatic or the most, you know, painful experience, I just see that as such an honor. So I don't see that as heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I just say, okay, we're gonna hold this
mm-hmm.
and we're gonna, you know, honor it and we're gonna love it and we're gonna heal it and we're gonna integrate it. That's how I experience. I see what I do not as a treatment. I'm just doing life with you. And life can sometimes be heavy mm-hmm. and life can sometimes not be that heavy mm-hmm. and life can sometimes be really great.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm here for all of it. So yeah, some days it's harder than others, but it's a very real thing. I guess it's who I am. It's not what I do.
Mm.
It's who I am and what I see as my work. I'm not a clinical psychologist who got a, you know, PsyD or a doctorate. It's
emotionless,
not,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I do is a very human thing. And yeah, some days it does weigh heavy on my heart because that's just that day.
That's beautiful.
But it's very, I love it and I honor it and I'm here for it.
That's so beautiful. I love the way you said that. And I guess parting message for everybody now that we're starting 2025, what would you say are the healthiest practice for us to implement to start the year right and protect our happiness, our mental health and everything?
I would say have a reflective practice. Some people do that with a therapist. So I do therapy twice a week. I'm in analysis, actually. I engage with my own therapeutic process. Some people do it through journaling, but not journaling, this is what happened in my day. Really, like, this is what affected me today. I wonder why that affected me. This kind of reflective engagement with your inner life. That's how you build a capacity to hold bigger and bigger feelings. And I think as we move into the future, we're going to need to hold bigger and bigger feelings. And we're going to have to show up in bigger and bigger ways as humans. So I would say have a reflective practice. If that's one thing that I would say that could change your life, because when you reflect, then you know what your values are. When you know what your values are, then you know what your boundaries are. When you know what your boundaries are, then you know how to live your life. And then you're not yanked here and there because some new app came or your boss said this or your HR said that. Then you know, this is what I'm going to do and this is how I'm going to show up and this is what matters to me. And you'll be able to articulate it because you've reflected on it. So it gives you clarity and it gives you conviction.
Well, that was incredible advice. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shane.
It was a pleasure talking to you. I could speak to you for hours. There's so much more we haven't touched on, but thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.